Not long ago, on this program, I shared that I have a level of disdain, really that level rises each year, for trotting out Christmas stuff in the hours, literally following Halloween. That's because I do think we rush things just a bit. And isn't life traveling along fast enough anyway? Thank you very much. A part of the way I feel is, in fact, because I think we tend to rush things along. And a part of it, too, in this case, is probably because my favorite holiday is the next one on the calendar, and it's not Christmas. More on that over the course of this episode. Some would probably brand me a curmudgeon for how I feel, and in recent years I've actually come to embrace that designation, when it's hung on me. Do you know the meaning of the word curmudgeon? McManus has a very funny story about curmudgeons, probably a part of why I have come to embrace the label. A quick check online will reveal the following definitions. A bad-tempered person, especially an old one. Old, cranky, and more than a little stubborn. I'm not against Christmas, not at all. But let's take a few days to immerse ourselves in the next big holiday, Thanksgiving. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Thanksgiving for a lot of people, as it's evolved through the years, includes spending time with family, and sometimes traveling great distances to do so, a lot of game playing, watching a bit of football, and eating a whole lot of food, with traditional Thanksgiving foods often including such things as turkey, stuffing, gravy, sweet potatoes, cornbread, mashed potatoes, and a whole lot of desserts, of which pies, particularly pumpkin pie, are often prominent. There can be variations on those elements, and families often create their own special traditions. My own history with Thanksgiving looked largely like this. From the age of about 9 or 10 through my college years, my Thanksgiving was very consistent. Mom and Dad would load up my siblings and head off to some relative or other's house for a few days of what I described above. I was not included, and by my own choice. I'd remain behind with an elderly couple that took on the role of my grandparents, and they were the most important people in my life. Our Thanksgivings consisted of Grandpa and me checking the trap line and dealing with critters we caught, a little bit of football, some well-earned naps, and a meal that switched out duck for turkey. Grandpa did not care for turkey at all, and always included macaroni and cheese. It was the fulfilling nature of those precious days with my grandparents that formed the memories which to this day reinforce why Thanksgiving is still my favorite holiday. I can't imagine having been raised in a better way or by better people. I was incredibly blessed. We know, because of written record, that the initial event to which we trace the current holiday was a post-harvest festival held by the Pilgrims of Plymouth Colony in what is now Massachusetts, and also attended by the local Wampanoag tribe, who greatly assisted them in getting to the point of being able to have a first Thanksgiving. That first celebration happened in the fall of 1621 and lasted for several days. We also know something of what was eaten, again because folks took the time to write it down. Edward Winslow, one of the English leaders who attended that first celebration, wrote home to a friend, "Our harvest being gotten in, our governor sent 4 men on fowling, that so we might after a special manner rejoice together after we had gathered the fruits of our labors. They 4 in one day killed as much fowl as, with a little help besides, served the company almost a week. At which time, among other recreations, we exercised our arms, many of the Indians coming amongst us, and among the rest, their greatest king, Massasoit, with some 90 men, whom for 3 days we entertained and feasted. And they went out and killed 5 deer, which they brought to the plantation, and bestowed on our governor, and upon the captains and others." William Bradford, who was then the governor of the colony, wrote in his book, A Plymouth Plantation, "And besides waterfowl, there was a great store of wild turkeys, of which they took many, besides venison." The rest of the food is speculation, based on what was known to be in abundance at that time. The fowl that Winslow mentioned was likely a combination of ducks, geese, swans, and passenger pigeons, which got some mention on here not long ago. Because they were located on the coast, it's probable that seafood lovers would have enjoyed that first Thanksgiving, as fish and shellfish were probable menu items. Wild nuts of various sorts, corn, beans, pumpkin, and squashes, also probably were included. I have read in several places that although turkeys were a big part of the meals, They probably weren't the centerpiece that they are today. They are, however, one of our biggest ties to that first celebration, and the ones we still have today. The bulk of today's turkeys come from stores by way of commercial turkey farms. The bulk of those farms are clustered in 8 states, with Minnesota leading the way at over 40 million birds per year. By the way, we eat something like 45 million birds each Thanksgiving, give or take a few. Those first birds, though, those were wild turkeys. I have hunted wild turkeys. Frankly, I miss hunting wild turkeys, whereas Alaska is the only state in the Union to not have a wild turkey population. If you've never hunted turkeys, it's a lot more like big game hunting than any sort of bird hunting. Turkeys have, hands down, and it's not even remotely close, the best eyesight of any animal I've ever hunted. They rely on that eyesight, and if you think you're going to kill a turkey, that's the biggest thing you're going to need to overcome. They are extremely good runners, can fly better than most people probably would suspect, and they seemingly are always on red alert. So, how do you succeed at killing a turkey? Well, pretty much the same way we do around here for a bull moose. Get them hopped up and pining for the females, and use that against them. They can be seduced by calling them in, combined with a few decoys, to make them think that love is just a field away. My very first turkey was a jake. Jakes are juvenile males. Well, think paddlehorn bulls for a moose comparison. They can be a little more gullible. That first turkey for me, that jake, happened after I discovered I really sucked, that first year anyway, at calling turkeys. When I would call, they'd either run the other way or slink away, which was not at all the desired effect. The particular evening that I killed that jake, I had my decoys on the edge of the field. And my decoys included several hens and a jake decoy. Not long before sundown, a couple of jakes and a big tom showed up at the other end of the field. You could see that the tom was skeptical from the get-go. He hung back. The one jake, though, he started calling loudly to challenge my jake, and was clearly put off that mine would not answer. I'd made the decision not to call and risk scaring them. Eventually, the rudeness of my decoy staying silent was too much for the real jake, and he literally charged and ran into my decoy, at which point I shot him dead. Sometimes one of your biggest strengths can be knowing just what your weaknesses are, and mine that year was calling. Those first turkeys harvested and provided for the first Thanksgiving, those were killed without the benefit of camouflage, hunting blinds, or decoys. I'm going to guess what the truth is that they were really good hunters, and turkeys were a little less cautious back then. But the fact of the matter is they killed and ate turkeys and did so with firearms that are a lot more primitive than what we have today. Despite cartoons that would indicate otherwise, the Pilgrims did not use flare-barreled blunderbusses, but rather smooth-bore muskets and fowling pieces of an early flintlock design. Hunting was likely a very short-range affair, irrespective of the gun that was used, and they got good at using what they had, which is what happens when whether you eat or not is tied to your success with your gun. I don't know what my Thanksgiving will hold for me this year. As it stands, and as I record these words, I'm looking at a Thanksgiving potentially without my wife, who may still be recovering from surgery in Anchorage, and for sure without my oldest daughter, who's in her first year of college in Kansas. While I haven't gotten the invite yet, I've been a guest of a friend for the past several Thanksgivings, and it's certainly been a welcome one. His wife makes the very best ham and macaroni and cheese I've ever had the pleasure to eat. So, that may be this year's direction as well, just minus my wife and a daughter. I know this, with every successive year, I am more aware of how truly blessed I am and thankful for what I've been given. This year will be no different in that regard. In closing, I'll toss out a couple of suggestions, in case you've been living under a rock and haven't seen these. First, best Thanksgiving movie, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. If you haven't seen it, you should. Heartwarming and funny, it's Steve Martin and John Candy at their finest. Also, if you haven't seen the Thanksgiving turkey episode of WKRP in Cincinnati, again, you should. That's probably my all-time favorite sitcom episode. YouTube it if you can, particularly the last 10 minutes or so. To one and all, a safe and happy Thanksgiving. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.